what I wanted to talk about tonight, especially, was mysteries, mystery and secret. I'd like to begin with Matthew 13. Now, the word mystery first occurs in the Septuagint, Masturion. In Daniel 2. And it's significant to see in what particular setting it is. It's in a setting where a king had dreamed a dream and then forgotten what it was, and then he threatened everybody in his realm with death that wouldn't tell him, that is, all of his wise men. And Daniel finally told him, said that God was a revealer of secrets. However, this setting in Daniel is Israel in captivity, servitude, in Babylon for the 70 years. And we note as we go through that this word mystery quite often is used whenever Israel seems to go off of the stage. So, hi. So mystery seems to come on the stage then when something goes wrong with Israel's history. Now in Matthew 13, and I think we just better kind of take that up a little bit and not take too much for granted. Matthew 13. Now, on page 15 or 1336 in your companion Bible, you have a very good outline of this. Right under where it says chapter 13 is a very good outline in there. And Dr. Bullinger recognized the fact that there are 8 parables in Matthew 13 instead of 7, as is the orthodox teaching. For centuries, it seems that folks overlooked the last one. And you notice that in verse 1, the same day went Jesus out of the house and sat by the seaside. Your first 4, your first half of these, are spoken out of the house and down by the seaside and spoken to the multitude. Second half are spoken in the house and to the disciples. Now, a parable. Well, I think that the common orthodox way of treating a parable or trying to define it is that it is a story or something to make truth more clear. But you don't find that said in this chapter here. And let's find what, after a while, what it does say. And great multitudes were gathered together unto him, so he went into a ship and sat. They'd about crowded him off into the water, I suppose. So he crawled on the boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. Now you see, he had a nice big congregation there, multitudes. And they would stand and listen to him instead of having to have some nice cushioned pews. He's the one that sat. How different. And he spake many things unto them in parables, saying, here's his first parable, behold. That's the introduction, behold. And this is one parable by itself, and then you'll find that there are 3 more follow. And each one of those is introduced by the word another, 3 times. Behold, a sower went forth to sow. And when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowl came and devoured them up. Some fell upon stony places where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up, because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. but other fell into good ground. I brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. Who hath ears to hear? Let him hear. And the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? He answered and said unto them, Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. So he spoke in parables to hide the truth instead of making it plain. So orthodoxy is wrong. Parable does not explain the truth, it hides it. And these were given for the disciples especially, not for the multitudes, because most of those never did want to know what they meant. But when the disciples wanted to know what they meant, they were explained. That is, to some extent at least. But later on, these things are brought to their memory, and the Holy Ghost teaching them, and they would remember those. And also nowadays, we can read them and see the key, because a lot of these things have been fulfilled. And so then they eventually do help us to see. But at that time, he said, to them is not given. No. Now before we go on here, we might just explain this one a little bit. Because there's an interval in this one. But it doesn't say anything about it. No punctuation of any kind or parenthesis or anything to show it in your reading at all. Now can anybody tell me, in this first parable, ending with verse 8, where that the interval is and how long it might be? Between 7 and 8, quite likely. Well, how long? Yeah, round numbers, 2,000 years. Now, the first sowing, some of the seeds fell by the wayside. And it was along the wayside where John the Baptist was preaching and baptizing folks. The wayside where the ford was across the Jordan. And the fowls came and devoured them up. Fowls are the evil ones. Birds. I guess most folks know fowls are birds. And the ministry of John the Baptist was fairly soon forgotten. And then some fell upon stony places, where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Now there is the ministry of the Lord and his apostles during the time of the Gospels. And when he performed miracles and did great things, why, it looked like there was going to be a lot of seed growing. And so came up quick. But you know, that ground only had 2 or 3 inches of dirt on top of the rock. And it's a little like some of our western country I've seen. In the spring, my oh my, it just gets green and nice and all the flowers and everything is on it and so on. And you hit that same place in August and nothing but grasshoppers. Dry and brown, everything's gone. You wouldn't dream there'd been flowers blooming there a couple of months earlier. And so here is the work of the Lord and his disciples. A lot started to follow and so on, but when he got a little too deep one day, the multitude left him, and he turned to his disciples and says, Will you go away also? And that's when Peter made his great confession. O Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. So on. And then some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. When you go to reading some of the epistles of Peter and James and John, so on, you can begin to see that this was the work of the apostles during Acts. And it's spoken expressly the fact that the cares of this world, that's the thorns and so on, choked off some of the seed and it didn't bring forth any fruit. the end of Acts, this program was ceased, and a new program began. But when this program is over and God starts to deal with Israel again, and we read the prophecies, we find that it fits right into this verse 8. The other fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. So there will be a time when the sowing of the seed, which is the good news of the kingdom, the gospel, will bring forth much more fruit than it ever has yet. That's in accord with prophecy. Well, now you see there is something hidden in that. There's an interval in that. Just like the time that the Lord was reading from Isaiah in the synagogue in Nazareth. And he left off in the middle of a sentence. Because there's a great interval between the day when the prisoners should be let loose and day of restoration and so on, and the day of wrath or vengeance. Verse 12, for whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken even away that which he hath. Figure that out. How's your arithmetic now? How can you take something away from somebody who doesn't have anything to start with? Well, we solve that nowadays easily. We just go to a loan association and float a loan. That puts us down in the red, really. So it'd be counted as a debt, see, against him. So the fellow who doesn't have anything, he's even counted as being in debt. He's going to have to pay something somewhere, sometime. Well, this is, of course, anticipating that parable about the fellows with the pounds or the talents. And the one which didn't use the talents was given him. Now, remember, that wasn't his. It was just given to his care. And he didn't do anything with it, so he didn't have anything. So he says, well, Master, here's your talent. Well, it was. He kept it safely. Hid it in the ground. But he didn't bear any responsibility to it otherwise than that. So he was called a wicked and slothful servant. What's slothful? What does that word mean?
You don't keep your bedroom cleaned up.
Right. Lazy. Wicked and lazy servant. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they, seeing not, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And now seeing they see not. No, I've seen people look at something and didn't see it either. And also hearing, but they don't understand anything. So I guess he's hitting the nail on the head there. He knows how people act. You know, it may be when the Lord was speaking some of these discourses, some of the people were thinking of something else and weren't hearing him at all. Just the noise of his voice is all. And in them, and notice this now, because this is one great turning point here. Matthew, this is the first time this prophecy from Isaiah 6 is quoted in the New Testament. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing ye shall hear, and shall not understand. And seeing ye shall see and not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. And he says to the disciples, because they were the ones that asked this, but he says, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. So his disciples have been pretty good students, haven't they? Better than some we have in school sometimes, the public schools. For verily I say unto you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear those things which ye hear, and have not heard them. Yes, the prophets had foretold some of the things that the Lord would do, and some of the things that he would say and teach, and so on. And it says they would have liked to have known. They would have liked to have looked into it. So these disciples were very, very fortunate then that they lived at a time that they could see these things and hear those things. And then he goes further. Hear thee therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh that wicked one and catcheth away that which is sown in his heart. So that's the time of the ministry of John the Baptist. This is he which receives seed by the wayside. But he that received the seed in the stony place is the same as he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receiveth it. Yet hath he not root in himself, but dureth for a while. For when tribulation or persecution ariseth because of the word, by and by he is offended. That's when the sun comes up and scorches. He also that receives seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. But he that receiveth seed into the good ground, is he that heareth the word and understandeth it, which also beareth fruit, and bringeth forth some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Now you can begin to understand it, although this had a prophetic meaning and covered 4 different periods of time, it is also true for any time. Because in any group, you will find these 4 kinds of people, usually. Some who just don't understand it and get snatched away before they ever have a chance to even think on it. And then some that, it looks like something new and something good to them and so on, but when the sun comes out, when a little persecution comes on and there, somebody says, Bullingerism, away they go. Then there are some that just get so busy with the cares of this world, all these things that first thing you know, they fizzled out. And then there are a few who hear it and it brings forth fruit. They understand. Now this is the second parable. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man which soweth good seed in his field. For while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat, and went his way. Wouldn't that be a mean trick, a dirty trick? I expect they used to do things like that back in those days. I don't suppose you'd find anybody doing anything like that now, would you? Tares? It's an English word, diwan, and it looks just like wheat when it's growing until it comes time to head, and then you can tell the difference. It's a counterfeit wheat. But it's a weed. Now, we don't have it over here. I know. I never saw any of it. We used to have an awful nuisance in our wheat fields, and I haven't seen any of that for a long time, and that's just black seed cockle. Bitter, poisonous. Maybe some of the folks here have seen that sometime. But I just haven't seen any of that for a long time. It used to be an awful nuisance in wheat fields, and I know Dad liked to have me go through the wheat field and pull out the rye and the cockle so that when he thresh his wheat, right? He would have pretty good wheat for seed, all clean and nice. Of course, we'd run it through the devil anyhow. Now, anybody here know what a devil is in connection with harvesting? Oh, that used to be a job to crank that thing. Big, long thing. Had a big fan in it. Yeah, that's it. Well, they used to call it a devil. And it has riddles in it. You know, you talk about leaking like a riddle. Or a riddle is those rectangular screens that's in there. And you can lift them out to clean them out and slide them back in again. And so the wheat would go through those and the chaff and stuff would stay back in them. So you had riddles in it and other names that you might talk about. I know just this evening I was reminding May about a big dough board we have here about so wide out of one piece of wood, and across the ends a couple of cleats. And she'd forgotten, I guess, what those were. But those cleats are a good grade of straight grain white oak, and they're slats from binder canvas. Binder canvas, you know, and the binders used to have, they had rolls and a canvas way wide, and carry the grain up in there and had these slats on it about so wide, and staples to it tightly. And so that is a pretty good piece of wood. So for the ends of it, to hold it from warping and so on, I nailed on these canvas slats. Well, a lot of things are getting lost. I did ask her then what a wagon hammer was. I happened to notice one down in the shop today, or yesterday, I guess it was. She remember what that was. Well, ask these questions when things come up that you don't understand, because some of this language is new to some of us. And so these tares grew up, and of course he never knew what it was until getting almost harvest time. It says, and when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst thou not sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while ye gather up the tares, ye root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them. But gather the wheat into my barn. And one was taken, and the other left. The tares are taken first. Not the way Orthodoxy ordinarily teach you about the coming of Christ and the rapture. The angels come and take out all of the fins first. They're disposed of. Then he comes to his people and they receive him with joy. Well, I won't go into that any further here just now, but I think you can begin to see what this is. This is taking you right up to the end times. This is taking you into something that hasn't happened yet. The tares have not been sown yet. This is in the last days when the king will be in force again. And in order to defeat the Lord's purposes and so on, at the very end there will be another interruption of the seed of Satan, the tares, which will have to be taken care of in the end times. And that'll be taken care of it, that when the Lord comes, the tribulation is over and the last trump sounds. Well, third parable. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is like to a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds that a man would ever think of planting in his field. Now, it wasn't the least of all seeds by any means in size. It's just the last thing that a man had ever sown in his field, because, well, who would ever think of going out in the fields here and sowing ragweed? It's just a common nuisance anyhow. Who would want to plant it? And so it was with the mustard weed over there. And I can remember when mustard was an awful nuisance on the farm that my dad used to have down toward Talma. I haven't seen any of that for a while. That is, that particular type of mustard didn't grow up this high. And so here it says a fellow plants a mustard seed in his field. But when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. I think you girls remember me telling you about the mathematical weed. Remember that one? It was a little like this mustard, you see. It got so big and got to looking itself. It was geometry. Geometry. So you can think of your mustard plant this way. It's something abnormal, you see. It wasn't really a natural growth. Now, mustard plants don't get as big as trees, but this one in this story did. and noticed that these same birds had picked up the seed along the wayside, those evil ones, they lodged in the branches of this big tree. So here's a picture of the kingdom, which will grow up to an abnormal growth as far as the outside part is concerned. And evil ones will lodge in it. And so a day is coming when there will have to be a judgment. And that makes me think of one thing that he tells them that will happen in that day. That when he comes back, there will be people on the earth, living on the earth at that time, who will be doing a lot of things in his name. Casting out devils, healing the sick, and all of these things, and so on. He'll have to say to them, "Depart from me, you workers of iniquity, I never knew you." And there's a lot being done in Christ's name today that has no relationship to Christianity, whatever. And it's growing. So here's your picture of the tree. It's even in the church, it's growing a little the same way. That is Christendom. And then here is the fourth parable, the last one he speaks to them outside. "Another parable spake he unto them, the kingdom of heaven is likened to leaven." Now, you girls know what leaven is? It comes after 10. Yeah, and bread wouldn't be very good without some leaven, I would. Yeast. "And she took this and hid it in 3 measures of meal, so the whole was leavened." And that wouldn't take too long, because that stuff really grows and spreads. Well, that was a very short parable. And this is very near what he is talking about when he's talking about the mustard seed. This word leaven appears 13 times in the New Testament. That's a number of evil. And once the Lord said to his disciples, "Beware the leaven of the scribes and Pharisees." And they understood that he meant their teaching. And it was wrong. Evil. And so he says that in the outward aspect that the kingdom will grow up until it is all leavened with evil doctrine. "All these things spake Jesus unto the multitude in parables, and without a parable spake he not unto them." In spite of that, verse 34, and as plain as it is, people will tell you that Luke 16, the parable about the rich man and Lazarus, which he spoke to the scribes and Pharisees, is not a parable. But it says very plainly here, "And without a parable spake he not unto them." That rules out any idea of that being not being a parable at all. It has to be a parable. And then you have another reference in Luke itself that tells us the same thing. They spoke to them in parables when he's speaking to the multitudes. But I don't know. You see, if I read this verse 34 and stress that, right away I have them all on my back. They're blaming me for writing the Bible. And that's what you get whenever you try to teach people truth that's a little different from their accepted tradition. They'll have them all right on you right away. I'm blaming you for it, not God. Strange, isn't it? And he says the reason for it, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, "I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things which have been kept secret from the foundation of the world." Again, you see, it shows that it's not explained. "Then Jesus sent the multitude away and went into the house." Now, here's the turning point, into the house. "And his disciples came unto him." So there he is in the house with his disciples. "Whereas before he had been in a boat out on the seashore and speaking to the multitudes. And his disciples came unto him, saying, Declare unto us a parable of the tares of the field." They didn't understand. He answered and said unto them, He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. He's the one that gives out the word. The word originated with him. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one, the devil. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. And the harvest is at the end of the age. And the reapers are the angels. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of this age. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Isaiah 60, the second verse. Then, after that is done, then you're ready for the harvest. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who hath ears to hear, let him hear. Again, he's starting his second parable in the house. The kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in the field, and which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth, and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. Incidentally, this again is the first one of this last bunch of parables. You see, you had a one by itself in the first four, and then three. Now you have three, each beginning with again, and then ending up with one by itself. So it's a reversal. I have to keep that in my mind. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in a field, and which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof go and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. Now, there isn't an explanation to that. But we do have an explanation up there in verse 38 that the field is the world. And so the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hid in the world, and which when a man hath found, I don't know who that is that found it, was it Christ? He hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. He buys the whole world in order to get the treasure. And who's the treasure in it? Yes, or especially the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it isn't so hard when you begin to see the trend of these things and how they all work together. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Well, Israel is the pearl, I believe. That's referring especially to the kingdom. Again, the third one, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good in the vessels that cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the age. The angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire, and shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Isaiah 62 again. Now remember that the Israelites could only eat certain fish. An Israelite did not dare to eat catfish. It didn't have scales. It was specified in the law that the fish that they ate had to have scales. That ruled out also the eel. And of course, if they found a hickory shad, there wouldn't need to be any law against that because you can't eat it anyhow. Too many bones. And Jesus saith unto them, Have ye understood all these things? And they say unto him, Yea, Lord. I wonder how much they didn't understand them. At least they got enough to get a good start, and they would remember and fill out the rest of it later on. Then said he unto them, Therefore every scribe which is instructed into the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man that is in a household, which bringeth forth out of his treasure things new and old. And there is his last parable. If you're instructed, he said, into the kingdom of heaven, or you're like a man that is in a householder, which bringeth forth out of his treasures, new and old. Your note says new means new in time. And, no, it's new in character, that's right, not new in time. New in character. And of course the Lord was revealing a lot of new things to him concerning the kingdom. Well, now there we have those eight parables in Matthew. I think you know that these came after they were plotting to take his life, and so he was rejected. And because of his rejection, he quoted from Isaiah 6. But this rejection and his cutting off, as in the prophecies, was no mystery or no secret. That wasn't the secret he was telling them. That the Messiah was to be cut off, and that there would be some time element missing in the kingdom purpose, was one thing that they were to understand, especially because Isaiah there was quoted. And the mystery would probably be what was to happen to the kingdom in that time. That would be a part of it. Of course, that isn't really the mystery itself. Now, John the Baptist had preached, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand," or "draweth nigh" would be a good translation of it. The Lord proclaimed the same thing, so did the 12, and so did the 70. And one day, when the Lord was talking to these wicked, unbelieving Pharisees, he says, "The kingdom of heaven is within you." Should be translated "among you," because the king was standing there among them. Of course, most folks will tell you today that it means that the kingdom of heaven is in their hearts, in the hearts of those wicked Pharisees. Can you imagine it? And that's how far that orthodoxy has to go sometimes in order to cover up some of their other mistakes. The kingdom was a possibility while the kingdom of the king was here. It was never set up. Well, now, was there a kingdom when he left? Can you have a kingdom without a king? Not very well. Well, that's another mistake of orthodoxy. They're talking about the kingdom being going on. They're extending the kingdom and so on today. There's no king here. There's no kingdom. And if they're talking about kingdom all the time, and it's in your hearts, they say. Well, that's certainly a long, long way from the prophesied kingdom we have in the prophecies in the Old Testament. But that's a very real thing, with a real king sitting on the throne of his father David in Jerusalem. Real people. So on. Not some imaginary thing. Not some vapor that can float away. I know there are a lot of people today that say they just don't believe in teaching children fairy stories, but that's all a lot of baloney and so on. But look at the fairy stories that Christendom today believes. That's fairy stories, just the same as some of the stories you find in children's books. Well, I'm not particularly against fairy stories for the youngsters. I think it's kind of nice to have a little of that, because so often they're a little bit on the parable order. And after a while they begin to realize that there's something at the base of them, something truth in them. I mean, I see it just at first, just an entertaining story. But as a usual thing, the old-time fairy stories I used to know when I was younger, I don't know what to dish out now. Why, they were rather instructive. In fact, in those days, virtue was rewarded. You don't hear much of that now. That's rather out of date. So, fairy stories and so on. I wonder if the girls here, did you like the story of Cinderella? Or did you ever hear it? Well, it's rather a fantasy, you know. It's a fairy story and all that sort of thing. In fact, it does have a fairy in it, you know. When you come to think about it, it's a virtue rewarded and so on. It has a good teaching in it, probably. Now, this period that we're in now was foretold by Hosea in chapter 3 in the 4th verse. Let's take a look at that again. We have read that a few times, but keep it fresh in mind. Hosea 3:4. You have Ezekiel, Daniel, and then Hosea, if you want to find the place. And 3:4 would be on page 1212 in the Companion Bible. He says in verse 3, "It fish will pay it, let abide for him many days." Then verse 4, "For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king." And that's exactly what they're doing now. They don't even have a queen. And without a prince, and without a sacrifice, without an image, without an ephod, and without teraphim, so on. Turn to chapter 6, Hosea 2. 6:2. "After 2 days will he revive us. In the third day he will raise us up, and we shall live in his sight." There gives you an idea of the present interval, how long it'll be. It's going to be 2 days long, whatever that means. The character of the time, as far as God dealing with people is concerned, there is hidden. It's said to be without a king, they'd be without any sacrifices and so on, as far as Israel is concerned. Didn't say anything about Gentiles at all. But it does indicate that as far as Israel is concerned, it'll be cut off. And it'll be 2 days. But as to what is going to be done during that time, that's a secret. Hidden God from ages and generations. I never told until Paul gets in prison at Rome. Now we have another mystery. So much for this. The mysteries of the kingdom. 2 Thessalonians 2:7. Page 1796. I think we will start with verse 1. So we know what this is talking about here. I just jotted down the one verse in my note. The whole section takes it up. "Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord," the parousia, his presence, "of our Lord Jesus Christ, and our gathering together unto him," which he talks about in the first epistle in the 4th chapter of Thessalonians, and also the 15th chapter 1 Corinthians. the so-called rapture. Without in remembrance, he says, keeping that in mind, that ye be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. Now, evidently somebody's been forging Paul's name, and have written a letter claiming that it was from Paul himself. And they've been misinforming these people. And then the misinformation is that the day of Christ is at hand. It is that Christ could come any day. Oh, well, they were believing that stuff way back in that day, weren't they, someone? He could come at any moment. Well, that's what some people that Paul condemned were teaching at that time. And you hear it all over today. Christ could come at any moment. And then Paul goes to explain, let no man deceive you by any means. For that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first. And that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Now that's got to happen before the Lord can come. Now if that man of sin, if the son of perdition has been manifested somewhere in the world today, well then Christ could come probably. Or unless there's some other things that are coming here too. Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now, is there anybody sitting in the temple of God today trying to prove that he is God? Well, where is the temple of God today? There isn't any. So there's got to be a temple